Okay, folks. All right. Where I am. Where am I? I'm not lost by... I have two beautiful people sitting with me this morning in the studios. Both of them. One of them weighing here. Don't pay war taxes. I mean, with a button sitting up here in the studios with me. Don't pay war taxes. I mean, this is... Can you imagine me, Shelley Stewart, sitting up in here... Don't pay war taxes, and I believe that's her husband sitting over there. Could be husband, brother, maybe your father. I don't know. Could be your father over there. I don't know. I mean, it could be your father. What are you laughing for, man? I'll ask you in just a minute. I believe this darling, and she's going to pull to that microphone. I'd like to welcome her first, Mrs. Juanita Nelson. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing very well, except that it's rather cold for Birmingham.
What do you mean cold for Birmingham, darling?
Well, I'm from Massachusetts, and I'm used to it, but I thought we were going to find a lot of sun down here.
Find sun?
Mm-hmm.
There's sun out there. I mean, look out there. Don't you see that sun?
Well,
did they tell you in Massachusetts?
A lot of heat.
Did they tell you in Massachusetts that Alabama does not have sun? Did they tell you that Bull Connor took the sun with him?
Well,
I mean, what do you think? What do you think you are? You in Birmingham, Alabama, sweetheart?
Yeah, but this is the South.
So we have sun,
well,
we have rain, we have snow, we have sleet, we have ice, we have good people. Look at me.
Yes.
I need an Elton. I did get a chance, the opportunity to see your book. That is your book, isn't it?
That's right.
A Matter of Freedom and Other Writings.
Mm-hmm.
I did. I've gone through that, and boy, how impressed I was. Very impressed with your writing.
Well.
Yeah. Is that gentleman over there, is that your dad?
He is my life companion.
And your name, sir?
Wallace Nelson.
Oh, that's who you are. Wallace Nelson. I saw that. They called you Wally.
Right.
Yeah, they called you Wally. No one calls you Wallace.
No.
If they called you Wallace, you would tell them Wally, wouldn't you?
I might.
I'm very honored that you took your time to visit Shelley Stewart. I'm very happy to have you in the city of Birmingham, Alabama. Of course, there's some people, by the time you leave here, they're going to say they're not happy that you're in America at all. I mean, there you are. Why would you wear that button, don't pay war taxes, Juanita? May I call you Juanita?
Oh, of course.
You may call me
Nobody
Shelley.
Nobody calls me anything else.
Well, I don't know. They may call you some other things.
Well.
There's some other things they possibly call you, Juanita. You just don't know about them here. And they may call you those things this morning. Juanita, why are you wearing that button, don't pay war taxes?
I'm wearing this button because I want people to know that I don't pay war taxes and that it's possible to exist without paying them. I haven't paid taxes since 1948, and I'm still here. And
Wait a minute. You are enjoying this sunshine. You're enjoying this city of Birmingham. You're enjoying this country, United States of America, and you refuse to pay taxes?
That's right. I refuse to pay the federal taxes.
You won't pay federal taxes.
That's because the federal income tax, the federal withholding tax, and that's because more than half of the money goes to kill people. I think that's not a very good thing to do. And so I think it's not a very good thing to pay for. I don't like it, so, you know, we have a slogan back home somewhere that says, don't buy what you don't want. And I don't want murder.
You know something? There are so many things. You are a farmer, I guess.
That's right.
You're a farmer. Where were you born?
I was born in Cleveland, Ohio.
And you, Wally?
In Arkansas.
Born in Ohio. How did you guys meet? You in Arkansas and you in Cleveland. There was a girl, there was a boy. They, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, we met in jail.
In where?
In jail. J-A-I-L.
You've been you're criminals, aren't you?
That's right.
I mean, you're criminals. That's what
right,
you are.
Right, right.
Why were you?
I'm an ex-convict.
You're an ex-con.
I am that.
And you're proud to say that you're an ex-con?
Oh, yeah.
Did you kill anybody?
I refused to kill somebody. When I walked into the prison, one of the first things people do who go to prison and meeting people, people beyond asking your name. Perhaps before you ask the name, you ask, what are you in for? So this guy asked, what are you in for? I said, I'm in for refusing to kill. And he wanted to know what that meant, and I told him. He said, well, I'm in because I killed one person. My reply to him was, you didn't kill enough people, because there are people walking over in this country with decorations showing that they killed a whole bunch of people. You go back, and if you're going to kill, go back and kill a whole bunch of people, then you get one of those decorations, I told him.
So you're saying if he had gone and killed 50, 60, 70 Koreans or Japanese,
right,
whatever, if he'd killed 100,
right,
he would have been a hero.
Hero, right. That's what I was saying.
And you went to jail because of what reason?
Because I refused to be a part of the killing. I knew that I was being asked to kill my brothers and sisters and all people of my kin. And so I knew this.
You wouldn't go into the military.
I wouldn't go into the military and be a part of all of that.
What year was this, Wally?
That was in 1941.
41, and you were drafted to go into World War II.
Right.
And you refused?
I refused.
How long did they keep you in jail, Wally?
I was in for 33 months.
33 months, and you got out? What did they do then? They tell you got to go to the service then, Wally?
By that time, with what went on in prison and my behavior there, they didn't want me. Of course, I never wanted them, and they didn't want me either.
What went on in prison, Wally, if you don't mind sharing? What went on in prison?
Well, I was what you call a non-cooperator, which meant that I didn't feel that I was going to obey orders. In the first place, I knew that I wasn't going to eat, was going to be segregated. In my first meal call, I was in line, and when I walked up to, the line was white and black, but there was a guard standing there, and he would point to one direction, and well, most people went. So I walked up to where this corner was, and there were black over here, all black and white over here. So I just turned to the other side, to the white side. And so he said, wait a minute. And he said, you can't go over there. I said, what do you mean I can't? You can't eat over there. I said, what do you mean I can't eat over there? People, he said, black can't eat over there. I said, I'm going to eat over there. He said, no, you aren't. I said, okay. He said, well, if you're going to eat here, you got to eat over there. I said, I have nothing against those guys, but I'm not going to go for discrimination, so I won't be eating over there. And so I was kept from going to eat, and it was about 3 days or 4 days this went on, and then finally put me in a special cell for people who didn't know how to behave in their minds of how to behave.
Yeah, so they kept you isolated.
Yeah.
So you couldn't eat with the blacks and you couldn't eat with the whites. You just put you by yourself.
Right.
So you got out. Well, Juanita, you weren't in that same prison, were you?
No. I was, what happened was that I was a journalist at that time on the Cleveland Call and Post.
I'm familiar very well.
You are.
Yes.
And Wally and a friend were in Cleveland County Jail awaiting appeal on their cases because they had walked out of the civilian public service camp that had been put up for conscientious objectors, COs. I was called down to the jail by the sheriff, and a fellow reporter and I went down to see what, he wanted us to investigate the jail because he wanted to get his side of the story out. He knew that there had been some material getting out about segregation in the jail. And while I was there, Wally and his friend saw me and found out who I was and asked me to come visit them. And so I started visiting them regularly. But then lost their appeal and were moved to federal prisons, of course, I did not see them.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have Wally and Juanita Nelson here. They are, I guess you would call them draft dodgers, one of them. You can call them...
Dot dodgers.
Nothing dodging
about it.
Well, that's what it says here. That's what they called you in this country, draft dodgers.
They may be, but we are not draft dodgers.
No.
He was not a draft dodger. He was very forthright about it.
And I was very open and announced that I wouldn't do it and said to everybody I could, all this is about else. I do not believe in killing. I will not kill.
You will not kill and go into war and shoot and kill and become a hero that way?
No. Nor any other way. We don't, I guess you'd say for lack of, for an overall word, we're pacifists. And if we don't kill, to us, killing is the same.
Let me see if I can set this for you, ladies and gentlemen, who is sitting here this morning. By any means, this lady is no baby, and nor is her husband over there. He's not a baby either. Juanita was born before dirt. No, come on.
I was born in 1923.
I see that. I know. 1923.
That was a long time ago.
Yes, I'll help you to say. I'll help you to say a long time ago. And Juanita graduated from Central High School, Cleveland, Ohio, and enrolled in Howard University. Her first arrest, listen to this, folks. Her first arrest was in 1942. And do you know why this woman was arrested in 1942? We talk about sit-ins and trying to break the barriers of racism. And night talking about the civil rights struggles and the struggles of 1960s. But I want you to know this, that we bring these guests in this morning because when we learned that this woman here, listen to this, first arrested, she sat at a downtown D.C. lunch counter with two friends and ordered hot chocolate, finally served, and then arrested when they paid the posted rather than inflated price. This is the only occasion on which Juanita has cooperated with arrest. The Howard Dean of Women arranged their release after 3 hours in jail. She served as secretary of the Howard University NAACP, which succeeded in integrating at least one restaurant using nonviolent direct action, and this was in the 1940s. So we go back beyond the 60s, and there were people out there fighting. But there's one part there that grabs America with the two of you, and that's the part where you refuse to pay federal taxes. I mean, that's the part that people really had sat down with my staff. These are their freedom fighters, but they're un-American. You're not American. That's what they're saying of you, Wally, and you, Juanita.
Well, that doesn't bother me. If being American means kill, I'm very un-American. I will always be, and I will try to get other people to be un-American also, if you got to kill to be an American.
And you were about to say, Juanita.
I just wanted to make a bit of a comment about being un-American. I guess I would hope that I am un-American in the sense that I feel as though I am a citizen of the world and of the universe, and I don't think that I am better than somebody else because I happen to have been born here.
Juanita, here we are. How do you get out of paying federal taxes? Shouldn't you be in jail now? Shouldn't you be in jail now, Wally? according to the laws, do you work, don't you? Don't you have income?
Well, some people wonder whether we had income. We have a very small income. I used to have a pretty good income. But the matter of paying taxes, which most of it goes for war, I think that this is something that all of us ought to look at and decide whether we want to help killing, murder, or whether we don't. In my case, I say no. I mean no. Look, sure, I still pay taxes any time that I just rode in the car here, and I go to the store and buy stuff. So I pay my murder money that way.
Sales taxes and the like.
Yeah. I pay my murder money.
Your what?
Murder money. Murder money for murder. I pay that. Unfortunately, I pay it. Because if I'm going to live in this country anywhere else, I'm going to pay in that way. I'm not going to go out and work 7 days, 6 days a week and get paid and have part of that to go also for killing. I'm not going to do that.
You're, yes, Juanita.
Well, you also asked how we managed to do that.
Yes.
When we did earn a really taxable income, we would find jobs where there was no withholding. We did lots of odd jobs. I also worked on more than one job, you know, where and made less than a taxable income on each one, but together they would amount to taxable income. But then I wouldn't pay it because it wasn't taken out.
They could arrest you now. But they can arrest you right now for that.
Right.
Well, I guess so.
You can go to jail, Juanita, again.
Well, I've been in jail a number of times, only once because of tax refusal. In this country, you are very seldom jailed for refusing to pay taxes. It's on something else. The time I was arrested was for contempt because I wouldn't show records. I think even, isn't it true that even gang underworld figures get arrested on tax evasion? That's because, not for not paying the tax, but for tax evasion. But anyway, that's a more of a subtle sort of thing.
You know, going back, I want to go back. You met Wally in jail.
Mm-hmm.
What were you in jail for that time when you met Wally?
No, I was in jail touring the jail with the sheriff. First time I was a journalist, right. I've been in jail since. Well, as even before, because that in Howard I was in jail, but I've been in jail since that time.
You're known, by the way, as freedom fighters. That's what you're called.
Are we?
Yeah.
Oh.
There's some people call you freedom riders. Some other people call you some other things.
I was thinking about that.
Both of you, I know you are somewhere about 75 now.
I'll be 75 in August.
And Wally, you?
I'm later on this
89.
Month, 89 in the 20.
You'll be how old?
27th of this month.
89 years of age and 75 here. Much wisdom. You are known as rabble rousers, and there's a, you know, right now for it, they should protect the country. There's a big war budget out there to protect the freedom that you enjoy in this country. I mean, you enjoying the. I'm just saying what you hear every day. You know, Saddam Hussein thing over there now. You know, say if Saddam Hussein does not act right, we're going to go in there. We're going to bum him. We're going to make Saddam Hussein act right. Right now, because for the freedom of this country. I mean, that's what the war is about, aren't they, Wally? Aren't they, Juanita?
That's the lie. Yeah, that's the lie. That isn't what it's all about. It's about. Control and this type of thing.
What do you mean control, Wally?
Well, in terms of the nations, who is the controlling nation in the world? Who is the big bad boy out there? United States. We are absolutely hateful because we control the world, and any nation in that position is a mean, nasty nation. Any. Has to be.
Yeah, Juanita?
Well, what is protection, number one? I would think that protection would be, the best thing would be that nobody would have weapons. No, what do you think would happen if Japan or Iraq would say, we want to inspect and see what you have? Do you think we would stand for that? If we didn't have, the best way for us to protect is to get rid of the weapons here. And I think that a lot of other people would get rid of their weapons. I mean, I don't know. But you start with your own house. You don't go and try to get somebody else to do something.
Wally, Juanita, do you think the actions of America and other nations with weapons, do you think that's why we and the communities kill up on each other? Because as a nation, we say, let's kill?
I think that adds to it. I don't think that's necessary. I think we would, unfortunately, I suspect people would be killing each other one by one, but at least we wouldn't have this wholesale killing that is sponsored by the government, financed by the government, and the whole country is bent on financing this wholesale killing bit.
Do you know that one of the reasons why we have all the military, and perhaps they have it in other places, is for money? We sell weapons to everybody. We sold weapons to Hussein. So now we want him, to, because it doesn't serve our purpose anymore, we want to do that. But I just like to, I could say all sorts of things like that, but I would like to get back down to the idea that I do not believe that we should be taking other people's, taking people's lives. There are other, there are ways to do it, but I just think that is wrong. I don't, I became a pacifist, I'll tell you, knowing that I was a pacifist, even though I'd already been using nonviolence. When I talked with Wally in that jail cell and asked one of the questions that people always ask, you know, what would you do if somebody's going to kill you? And he said something like, I would try to, you know, try to keep them from doing it, maybe deflect the gun, the knife or whatever. But when it came down to it, I would not, could not decide that my life was worth somebody else's life, was more worthwhile than someone else's life. And I believe that.
And that's why you fell in love and married the man? That's all it took, Juanita?
A little bit more.
Forgot to tell you that.
A little bit more than that.
That's all it took, Juanita, for you to fall in love and marry this guy?
Well, don't you think that's a good reason?
Man, I don't know. I mean,
sure.
I'm not married to Wally.
Sure.
I'm not married to you, Juanita. I'm not married, but that's where you married the guy. You married a guy in jail. There you were, a journalist, a successful journalist, and there you
but
are.
Remember, I was also a jailbird, too.
Yeah, but you were in jail just for sitting at a lunch counter. He was in jail for... but not going, protecting, and fighting for his country. There's a difference.
You see, when you say protecting, that's all a false type of statement. You know,
they'd like to talk with Wally and Juanita, and we'd like for you to talk with them. We'll be back in 5 minutes, folks. You may join us then. We'll be ready to talk with the world when we come back. This is WATV. I'm Shelley Stewart. Not knowing that there were freedom riders, there were freedom fighters, in this country prior to the 1960s, I have two of them sitting right here before me this morning. Of course, they were the lady that called me. I mentioned yesterday that you refused to pay federal taxes, Juanita and Wally. And with that knowledge, they said that you should not be on the air. I should not interview you. I'm glorifying what you're doing. It's un-American to talk with you. Okay, I'm going to tell you that right now. It's un-American, Shelley, for you to talk with these people, and I wouldn't let my child. It's un-American. And we have enough problems now for you to... Well, people, I put it all out there. It's up to you. There, you, Wally, you were in, although you went to prison, not because you stole a hot dog, not because you robbed a convenience store, but you said you refused to kill, and they sent you to prison as a result. While in prison, you refused to be segregated in prison because of race. They wanted you to walk in one line and then walk in. So therefore, they put you in isolation so you wouldn't eat with blacks nor whites because you stood up for what you felt was right twice. One, you would not go to war because you did not believe in killing. Two, you did not believe you should be told to eat with someone just because of the complexion of your skin. And you were isolated for that for months and months and months. Your wife now, Juanita, and I'd like to share this with you, ladies and gentlemen. Since 1949, Juanita and Wally Nelson have refused to pay taxes because, as Juanita writes, most of the money goes for H-bombs and other combustibles capable of setting off conflagrations which cannot be extinguished by the average hook and ladder company. Their tax resistance resulted in Juanita's arrest and three-day imprisonment in 1959, described in the celebrated A Matter of Freedom. Additional aspects of the radical life were considered in two short stories, which I've shared. I've read. You've got to get the book, Juanita Nelson, A Matter of Freedom. I'd love to find out what makes them tick. There are those who are saying, I should not even talk to them. But should you talk to them? Maybe America. Maybe no one should be proud of your fight for your struggles. No one should be worried about it. Maybe they are. Then maybe there are some people out there that would like to find out more about Juanita and Wally Nelson. Juanita, do you find that there, everywhere you go, I'm quite sure there are people look at you and says, how dare you? Have you heard that, Juanita? I dare you not pay taxes. I dare you to enjoy America. I dare you.
Well, we hear some of that when we're out leafleting and that sort of thing. But many people ask, how do you get away with it? Most people don't want to pay taxes, but they're not going to do it openly, and people cheat But if somebody openly refuses, some people think that's pretty bad. And then we know a lot of people who feel the way we do. But people, we are so engrossed in our what we think is our financial security and that sort of thing, and our good name. And people, we are also, that they won't take what they think is a chance.
Are people afraid to even talk now? Is that fear?
I think a good bit of that. But the other thing I was going to say, I think we're programmed to accept what we are fed.
Oh, come on, Juanita Nelson. Now you're saying that we are programmed. By who?
Probably by ourselves, but it's a societal thing where I've heard people say, you know, I just never thought of that. I feel the way you do, but I'm just taught that I obey the laws. You're just scared to death. Scared of the FBI, scared of the IRS. We grew up, we were, very well aware of the McCarthy era, for instance. And there were people who were afraid to be seen with other people, not even because they were communists, but because they were suspected of being communists. So they had been seen with a communist. Sometimes they were afraid to be with us.
Yeah, you're not very kind to be around, are you?
Fear is a terrible thing.
Yeah, they told me, said, why would you interview these people even? Well, I interview everyone. I interview everyone. Does not make me any difference. Let's go to these callers. Good morning to you. You're on at WATV with Shelley Stewart. Where are you calling us from?
I'm calling from Pinson.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just happened to be scanning the radio and picked you up this morning. And just wanted to say, no one likes to be harassed or bothered by the Internal Revenue. And I must say, I think there's definitely more reforms going to have to come with the tax system that we have. But I've listened to your guest, and I'm just amazed. In fact, I find it very amusing, is that they are so disenchanted with this country. Why are they still staying here?
People ticked off with you, too. I mean, people seem to be just ticked off with you. And there you are telling people not to fight for their country, protect their country. You're telling people that they should not, you refuse to pay taxes because it's used to kill, and all of these other things. And then, Wally, you refusing to be segregated. Well, Wally, respond to him. Juanita, there you are. The guy says, either you love it or get out. Go find your island somewhere by yourself.
Well, I think that maybe the caller and I have a different concept of love. Or maybe I understand some things he doesn't, or maybe he understands things I don't. In any case, if we want to develop a society of loving and caring people, it's my thesis that we can't do it going around killing each other. And because the United States, we get this, that the United States is the best country in the world. That may be true. But if that's the case, then we ain't a hell of a mess. Because the United States is way off in my mind in terms of concern for human beings, concern for its own citizens. Why do we have so much hunger, unemployment, people unhoused in this country? There's no real need for that with all the money and stuff that's in this country. It's simply because, in my opinion, that we talk about being a caring society, we are not what we think we are. Because we would not have this type of thing in our society if we were a caring people.
All right, Wally, let me go to another caller here. Let me go to another caller here. Good morning to you. You're on with Shelley Stewart here at Open Mic. Where are you calling us from?
Pittsville, Shelley.
Good morning.
Good morning. I have one or two questions. I didn't get everything because I be late getting in on you. But do they have any children?
Okay. Do you have children, Wally and Juanita?
No, we don't.
No, they do not.
Do you own your home?
Do they own a home?
No, we don't.
No, they don't.
Well, do you have you worked on a job that you will cut different taxes?
You missed the program. You missed a part of it.
I missed something. I'm telling you that.
Okay. Let me run a capsule it right quick for you, okay? What they did, they did work. But what they did, they worked on many different jobs and just made just enough where they wouldn't be cut on those jobs. So what I understand, that's the way they did it.
But the job paid the taxes. Well, Thomas,
tell
you that they
just a minute.
Just
a minute. Juanita's going to respond there.
You know.
Well, hold it, honey. Honey, hold it. Hold it, darling. Hold it. Let Juanita respond to you now.
Yeah.
Okay, Juanita.
This is just a factual matter that what happened at that time was that withholding was not taken out because we would not work on a job where that was done. We would take two jobs, perhaps, and each was below the taxable income. Added together, they were taxable, then we wouldn't pay that. Or we worked on odd jobs, that sort of thing.
But I don't care what kind of job you work on, lady. Somebody paid the taxes, which was your boss, because it cheered out your hunger and everything else. The taxes just don't go for somebody killing folks, because in the first place, they're killing folks around here every day.
I'd like to respond to that. You are right. We do need to take care of people. And that one reason why we have so much poverty is that so much of the money goes to kill people, to the military. The other thing is that many of us who are tax refusers pay money, whether some people say, I'll pay the sum that they say I owe, and some people just say, I'll just pay money to those organizations, those groups, to those individuals who need it, people who are helping people. Let me just say 1 minute. There's a couple, for instance, where we live who do differently from the way we do. They refuse to pay the taxes, but they make out the form, send it in, and say, you know, I owe $2,100, but I'm giving it to this organization. As a matter of fact, one of the things they did was to give it to people in Georgia, Jubilee Partners, who made prostheses, made limbs for people whose limbs had been lost by people shooting at them and bombing them with stuff, with weapons made in this country. And they said, we want those people to be able to walk and not be paying to kill other people and to mutilate other people.
So I got one more thing to say, Miss.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the many people have died and people have tried to help them, and they found thousands and thousands of dollars hid around in their house, and the government got their taxes. That's all I got to say.
All right, thanks for the call. All right, Juanita Wally, is it that your main reason for not paying taxes is because of killing?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. War.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you support? But if they,
I don't necessarily support everything else. But I think things have to be put in categories. There are many things I don't like, but I might not go that far in doing something about them.
You know, the military advertise now. They spend millions of bucks now, telling you know that they're inviting people to join. So they'll give you $30,000. You get your education, and the military is maybe the best place possibly for young people to go to get them off the streets now, Wally and Juanita. That's what I hear. They say this is paid for by the U.S. Army, the U.S. Navy, the U.S. Air Force, the U.S. Marines. The military is to help these people, to qualify them to live a life. And then if they happen to have to go to war, they're there to protect the citizenry of this country. So, Wally, there are two sides of it that people are telling me, and I'm hearing, I would like to hear both sides of it. I'm hearing your side. I'd like to hear all sides of it. Notice you pulled up there when I was, I was telling the people, the Army, the military now, it takes thousands of people off of the street. You know that. You see it, I don't know whether you know it or not. They advertise that, well, you know, we will give you $30,000. We'll help you with your education. We'll do all of these things. Well, Wally, wouldn't you say there are people, there are boys and girls who would like to have professions? I mean, a career in the military. I mean, and protecting the country. Wally and Juanita, come on. Are you really for real here?
I don't know what you call for real. I often wonder whether this type of thing that the government is doing, and what you just talked about, how it's enticing young people coming on the offer of giving them money and stuff and getting an education. I wonder how real that is, except that I know it's real, because we have too many people who go into this program, who follow the government's advice and go right in to kill people and to not do things that I think would open their minds to doing some better things. It's too bad that our government cannot have a program to offer these things to young people without the idea that they must agree to be killers.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
I was going to say that, you know, I have heard statistics, this I don't really know, that it would be no more expensive to send people to Harvard than to send them to the military, or to doing something that helps people rather than destroys them.
Okay, Wally and Juanita Nelson, A Matter of Freedom is a book that you certainly, it's a must read, Peace and Gladness Press, and I certainly have a copy, and I'm very proudly that I study everything. I read everything. Good morning to you. You're on at WATV with Shelly Stewart. Where are you calling us from?
How are you doing, Shelly?
Hi, Brian.
How are you doing, Shelly?
I'm Brian, thank
How
you.
How are you doing to your guests?
Okay.
Well, you get so many dumb folks on your program talking about they don't pay taxes.
These are dumb ones.
Huh?
Are these the dumbest? Are these the dumbest ones you've heard?
These dumb folks what you got on this morning, they talking about going to the military and people getting killed. You ain't got to go to the military. They should walk around the corner and get killed. Now when you went to military, sir, I went. I stayed 329 days, and I go back. I'm an old man. I'm 82.
Hey, this guy's 89.
I'll go back. And these dumb folks who got on a program, they need to protect their mouth and pay the tax. If the lady asked them how many jobs they had, they ain't had no job. Going from town to...
Did you... Hold it, Juanita. Hold it. This guy's angry with you. He's ticked off with you. I mean, these people are ticked off with you. Okay, and I'll tell you. I mean, you've got the dumbest couple award according to him. Says out of all of the people I've had on this program, you two are the dumbest. Oh. I mean, you know, you're hearing this. I said, "What you come dumbest?" Says you're the dumbest. You're the dumbest two I've ever had.
I need to be the best of anything is pretty good. Yeah. With the dumbest, that might be.
I mean, that's what I'm telling you. That you're the dumbest two I've had.
Yeah. I don't know how you reply to such people, such thinking. If you call it thinking, will not get that way. I think that this is the type of mind that the government wants. Any government would want, who buys just whatever the government puts out. This is a typical type of mind that the government needs to be able to do all these things and go off and kill people and come back and...
Okay.
I wanted to say, I do want to put this in, I'm not sure it's a direct answer to this. Number one, someone asked, why don't we go somewhere else?
Yeah, why don't you leave the country?
Well,
why don't you get out of here?
I'd probably be the woman without a country, number one, because I think nobody would want me. I would speak up for what I believe and act up against what I dislike or think is wrong, no matter where I was.
So no matter where you went, you would do the
same
thing.
So I'm speaking about particular issues. I'm not even speaking against a country as such, particular issues that I believe need to be addressed. That's one thing. Then another thing I just want to bring up, to me it's very interesting how people can become so angry about this sort of thing, and, you know, they have a right to be if that's what they want. I want to know how many people out there would pay those taxes if they were not afraid that somebody was going, for whatever reason.
If they weren't afraid of the IRS.
Or the government or something. Because I don't know any people, very few people who, I'll say this, I somewhat honor those people who say, I don't have to have a law. The country needs money, and I'm going to pay this money. How much do you need? Or what's my portion? Or you don't have to send me a Dear John letter and tell me to report to the military. Our country needs to be protected, and I am going to, volunteer.
Yeah. Let me catch up a few calls here, Wally, and one later. I may have a few business calls coming in through here, too. All right. Good morning, Northside.
Yes, I want to be the devil's advocate a minute, and I'm listening to what you're saying. And, yes, if I wasn't afraid of going to prison, I probably wouldn't pay taxes either.
Hold it. You said if you were not afraid of the IRS, you would not pay taxes.
I hear it all the time. You know, I didn't just hear that. I hear a lot of people say that.
Oh.
But now let me say this. What about those people who are rich, who get away with paying very little taxes or no taxes, but they don't go to jail and they're not saying run them out of the country?
Oh, okay. Thanks for the call. Very good point. Good morning. Where are you calling us from?
Down.
Good morning, sir.
I'm prompted to call by that several calls that talks about the dumbest people on earth.
Well, no. They didn't say the dumbest people on earth. The guy said that these two are the dumbest I've had on this program. Yeah, they're the dumbest I've ever had here. And you were they've called you some dumb things too, Ron, but these are dumber than you.
Well, I want to take it from this perspective. What? The dumbest people on earth in terms of paying taxes will be those people who will support the MAPS program. They're dumb to the extent they're going to impose the 1% sales tax on food and over-the-counter medicine in a city where the elderly and poor already spend 25% on food, 21% on housing. And where do we get that numbers from? From the mayor of the city of Birmingham himself in his comprehensive housing affordability survey for 1995. And on top of that, how dumb could a people be who choose to build a, quote, dome stadium and a $22 million swimming pool for Richard Scrooge when they need $500 million for their school system, and they can't tell you, they can't begin to tell you
but Ron,
where they're going to get the money to
hey, Ron, for Ron, their Ron, school Ron, building. Ron, wait a minute, wait a minute. Ron, wait a minute. Will you let me work with you, please? Ron.
Yes, sir.
One thing is the difference. The tax that you're talking about is a voluntary tax. Just a minute, sir. Just a minute. What these people are talking about is the tax that the federal government demands.
You're not correct about that.
Wait a minute.
The sales tax is not voluntary. It has the same...
Wait a minute. The sales tax... Wait a minute. Ron, wait a minute, will you? What happens here? If the people vote for this tax, they vote to say, I wish to pay a penny more. The people themselves will say that. So, Ron, that's the difference. The people, if the majority of the people that vote say, I want to pay a penny more... Then, you know, they're doing that. They're volunteering themselves, Ron.
They'll do it out of ignorance.
Well, I don't mean Ron, but either way, Ron, if the people themselves, Ron, come on, baby, come on.
Ron,
if the voters decide that they want to vote a 1 cent sales tax, they do that themselves. Okay, Ron, goodbye. Okay, Ron, I hear you, Ron. I got to go. I mean, there's a difference. What's happened, Wally and Juanita, you're not from Birmingham, you're from Massachusetts. There's a program coming up to add a 1 cent sales tax to build a stadium and help education and to do some other things. Okay, a lot of stuff's built in this thing, and it's not law. You know, it's right now in the state senate. I think they're down the senate's going to vote on it today, possibly, and the citizens of this area will have a right to support it or reject it, right? So if the people in this area decide that they want to support a 1 cent tax on themselves, that's them, right? Hmm? I mean, if they decide that no one's twisting their arms, right, Juanita?
Well, right about that, except I'd like to say this one thing. I do believe that we have to take individual responsibility for things. And the fact that a majority votes for something doesn't mean that it's right. I mean, I don't know anything about this particular tax.
But at least they supported it.
I'm saying here, we have to think for ourselves. And if the majority of people voted that you go and jump off a cliff, would you do it?
But they did it.
No, I
they voted.
Yeah, okay. But what I'm trying to say is,
it's law.
If I decided I thought it was a bad thing, I probably wouldn't do it.
But you know the way. but you know what'll happen here. What'll happen if people say I don't support it, so therefore they won't go to the polls and vote. Mm-hmm. So if, I don't want to pay it, right? So what'll happen when it comes up? They won't go to the polls and vote, and then when it passes, you understand? Then they'll say, I didn't vote for it.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I also think that it's of a different dimension from killing people and that sort of thing.
It's a different it's apples and oranges, to be honest. It's apples and oranges. Yeah. Come on. I tell Ron, it's apples. Just a minute. It's apples and oranges. I said, Ron, come on. I know he was trying to get us a little piece in there. I know that. I mean, he's trying to get us a little 2 cents worth in. I don't, you know. Good morning to you. You're on with Shelley Stewart, WATV. Where are you calling us from?
East Lake.
East Lake, speak up for us.
Well, and listen to the show today, and listen to your shows over the years, what I'm seeing is that we're getting another opinion, and it's very thought-provoking. And it makes you understand that just because somebody tells you to do something, and you have reasons to think that it shouldn't be done, you have options. And I think these citizens are exercising their options. And then they would have to be responsible for that decision. But it is thought-provoking in as much that it may bring about some change in the way that this country do something. It might not be in these people's lifetime, but they're not the only ones squawking about the Internal Revenue and how they do things. So with the people on the radio this morning, it will help to, I think, bring about more change and more humane treatment for people who is in trouble with the IRS. Because other people have genuine reasons why they don't want to pay.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, one caller called and said, these out of everything I've had, this is the dumbest two I've ever had up here.
Well, that's his opinion.
Yeah.
But if you are a self-thinker, as Mr. Juanita just said, it is something to think about. Even if when laws are passed and they spend our tax money on things we have no input in whatsoever.
Absolutely.
We just pay. And we don't have any input, and we can't even complain about it and for them to do anything about it, and they don't.
Are you proud to hear these two people out this morning with us?
Yes. Mm. I appreciate it because you can have something in the back of your mind and won't vent it because you think it is politically incorrect. But then to find there are other people all over the country who feel the same can be quite helpful.
Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
You're kind for calling. Thanks very much. And good morning. Where are you calling us from?
I'm from Zion City, Shelley.
Zion City?
Yes.
Hello, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I just called to tell Mrs. Nelson, Mr. and Mrs. Nelson, keep up the good work because most black people don't know how to think for themselves. They calling in saying that you're dumb. You're not dumb. Keep up the good work because once you get enough people to follow you and stop paying taxes, the one that's calling you dumb be the first one jump on the bandwagon, won't leave a seat for you and your husband. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. All right, Lisa, you got one or two there supporting you, what you're doing. At least you got one or two. At least you, one knit and Wally, yeah, one or two people.
So,
Well, I'm known across the country of provoking, you know, I'm going to go and ask questions. There are many that will not talk with me because they say I do ask questions and ask hard questions. And I have no particular agenda, you know. That's nothing hidden about me. I just ask questions. And that's what I do. And I'm going to continue doing that. And I'm not saying you're right, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying I support you or not support you. That's not what I'm here for anytime. Tomorrow morning, I am going to tell you that I'll be talking with the chief of police tomorrow morning. This is quite a contrast from two who met in jail. I mean, these two here, one went to jail. First thing about it, you didn't have to go to jail anyway, Wally. You know why? One, if you had gone down to the draft station, to the induction station, they wouldn't have accepted you in the Army anyway. I'm being honest with you. I mean, you went to jail rather than to fall it down through, Wally. I mean, they would not take a 4'1" guy in the military. Here you are, 4'1". I mean, they wouldn't have taken you anyway, Wally.
Are you calling us midgets? As some kids in the sixth grade class where we spoke, they said, to the teacher, Mr. Keith, I didn't know your friends were midgets.
I'm not calling you midgets. I'm just saying what I'm looking at over there, Wally, and as well as you, Juanita, neither one of you are 4 feet tall. They went to put the guy in the military anyway.
Now, I hope the audience realizes that the man is exaggerating.
I mean, this guy, they wouldn't have put you in the military, and there you went to prison instead of just going down there. Oh, Wally. Wally.
One correction. I did not go to prison. They put me in prison.
You should have gone down there and let the people turn you down, reject you. They would have rejected you anyway on your height anyway. They rejected people for flat feet. If they rejected people with flat feet, they would have sure rejected you for wearing a size 2.5 shoe.
Well, you came along too late. You should have told him that a long time ago.
All they had to do was listen. You know, to the both of you, I get all sides of everything, and both of you know that. And I mean, anywhere in the country, you know, David, is the guy named David that brought you over for me?
Mm-hmm.
David knows that I ask questions. I think people have a right to know. I think people have a right to hear all sides. What do you think about that?
I think that's true.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I agree with that.
And they can make up their own minds. Whether they agree with you or not, I think that people have a right to hear.
That's right.
Hmm?
At the very least, we're not preaching something that would hurt people anyhow. Let's put it that way.
It's not hurting people?
I mean,
if you're not going to pay your federal taxes.
It may hurt their sensibilities. But it doesn't really hurt them.
And it might hurt their sensibility, but then it might also make them realize that maybe I do have a mind that I can follow, that I don't have to wait for someone else to tell me what to do.
You know, Wally, if you had it to do all over again, Juanita, if you had it to do all over again, would you do it the same way?
I hope I'd do it better.
That's my feeling.
You would have gone and began to start trouble there in Washington when you were a student at Howard University. You would have gone and sat down at a lunch counter know so darn well you weren't supposed to go there.
Let me tell you that when we started doing that and we worked with CORE, Congress of Racial Equality, in the early days, people thought we were very dumb, you know? You're not going to get anywhere that way.
You mean in the 40s when you said, I refuse to be segregated because of the color of my skin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
People said you were dumb.
That's right.
Were you called dumb by black people then?
Oh, yes.
Mm. Was it the Negroes or the blacks that said that you were dumb for when you yourself decided that I refuse to? In the prison population, Wally, it was the Negroes or they called themselves Negroes. I think everybody called Negroes then, right? Colored?
Well,
it was those who said at that time that you were wrong.
No,
in
the prison, it was a bit different than on the outside. The prison situation, people were less frightened by it because they're in a frightened situation anyway.
They were less frightened to talk and speak out.
Yeah.
Because they were already in jail.
Yeah.
So they were more than likely in prison, speak out more, say, what the hell happened?
Also, they wanted to hear. They were anxious to hear what you have to say, particularly when you were coming up with a different type of thing. You weren't talking about playing dice or corrals and this type of thing. They were quite interested in listening to someone who wasn't talking about how many women he could lay or this type of thing.
I think also maybe the fact that people are in prison, they know that they're in prison. Out here, sometimes we don't realize that we're in prison.
Wait a minute. Out here, are you saying that Americans are in prison?
I think if our minds are closed and if we feel we are helpless to do anything or if we buy everything that somebody has or if we're in a situation, and this goes for all countries and all places, I think we are in prison a lot.
After this program this morning, Juanita, maybe you will remove that button you're wearing. Don't pay war taxes.
I'll get another one.
I mean, you remove that thing walking around in America. Don't pay war taxes. I mean, what are you telling the children? Aren't you ashamed of yourself? And you want to apologize for what you said this morning? You want to apologize?
I apologize for not explaining as well, maybe, as we could have.
What about you, Wally?
I think that... I would only apologize because I haven't been as forceful and as That's clear. Clearer than what I'm
saying. You've been pretty darn clear, Wally.
I would just like to say this. We are talking now about one particular thing. There are many other, or two things, racism and war, killing. But let's say that there is the flip side of that is the positive. I mean, I think it's all positive. I think it's positive not to do something wrong, but to know that we are for other things, you know, for community, for people getting decent wages, for all that sort of thing. And I think they're all together, that we could do much more in this country and other countries. If people knew how much was spent on war in the whole wide world, they would. I don't have the figures. I can't remember figures that well. But it's astounding how much we spend on weapons.
That was Wally and Juanita Nelson speaking to radio host Shelley Stewart and callers in 1998 in Birmingham, Alabama. It seems fitting to close tonight's program with an essay by Mark Twain, which was written in 1905. At the time of writing, Twain was asked if he was going to publish it, and Twain said, "No, I've told the whole truth in that, and only the dead can tell the truth in this world. It can be published after I'm dead." Of course, it has since been published. The piece is called The War Prayer by Mark Twain. It was a time of great and exalting excitement. The country was up in arms. The war was on. In every breast burned the holy fire of patriotism. The drums were beating, the bands playing, the toy pistols popping, the bunches of firecrackers hissing and spluttering. On every hand and far down the receding and fading spread of roofs and balconies, a fluttering wilderness of flags flashed in the sun. Daily the young volunteers marched down the wide avenue, gay and fine in their new uniforms. The proud fathers and mothers and sisters and sweethearts cheering them with voices choked with happy emotion as they swung by. Nightly the packed mass meetings listened, panting, to patriot oratory which stirred the deepest deeps of their hearts, and which they interrupted at briefest intervals with cyclones of applause, the tears running down their cheeks the while. In the churches, the pastors preached devotion to flag and country, and invoked the God of battles, beseeching his aid in our good cause, in outpouring of fervid eloquence which moved every listener. It was indeed a glad and gracious time, and the half-dozen rash spirits that ventured to disapprove of the war and cast a doubt upon its righteousness straightway got such a stern and angry warning that for their personal safety they quickly shrank out of sight and offended no more in that way. Sunday morning came. The next day the battalions would leave for the front. The church was filled. The volunteers were there, their young faces alight with martial dreams, visions of the stern advance, the gathering momentum, the rushing charge, the flashing sabers, the flight of the foe, the tumult, the enveloping smoke, the fierce pursuit, the surrender. Then home from the war, bronzed heroes, welcomed, adored, submerged in golden seas of glory. With the volunteers sat their dear ones, proud, happy, and envied by the neighbors and friends who had no sons and brothers to send forth to the field of honor, there to win for the flag, or failing, die the noblest of noble deaths. The service proceeded. A war chapter from the Old Testament was read. The first prayer was said. It was followed by an organ burst that shook the building. And with one impulse the house rose, with glowing eyes and beating hearts, and poured out that tremendous invocation. God the All-Terrible, thou who ordainest, thunder thy clarion and lightning thy sword. Then came the long prayer. None could remember the like of it for passionate pleading and moving and beautiful language. The burden of its supplication was that an ever-merciful and benignant Father of us all would watch over our noble young soldiers and aid, comfort, and encourage them in their patriotic work. Bless them, shield them in the day of battle and the hour of peril, bear them in his mighty hand, make them strong and confident, invincible in the bloody onset, help them to crush the foe, grant to them and to their flag and country imperishable honor and glory. An aged stranger entered and moved with slow and noiseless step up the main aisle, his eyes fixed on the minister, his long body clothed in a robe that reached his feet, his head bare, his white hair descending in a frothy cataract to his shoulders, his seamy face unnaturally pale, pale even to ghastliness. With all eyes following him and wondering, he made his silent way. Without pausing, he ascended to the preacher's side and stood there waiting. With shut lids, the preacher, unconscious of his presence, continued his moving prayer, and at last finished it with the words uttered in fervent appeal. Bless our arms, grant us victory, O Lord our God, Father and protector of our land and flag. The stranger touched his arm, motioned him to step aside, which the startled minister did and took his place. During some moments he surveyed the spellbound audience with solemn eyes in which burned an uncanny light. Then in a deep voice he said, I come from the throne, bearing a message from Almighty God. The words smote the house with a shock. If the stranger perceived it, he gave no attention. He has heard the prayer of his servant, your shepherd, and will grant it, if such shall be your desire, after I, his messenger, shall have explained to you its import, that is to say, its full import. For it is like unto many of the prayers of men, that it asks for more than he who utters it is aware of, except he pause and think. God's servant and yours has prayed his prayer. Has he paused and taken thought? Is it one prayer? No, it is two. One uttered, the other not. Both have reached the ear of him who heareth all supplications, the spoken and the unspoken. Ponder this, keep it in mind. If you would beseech a blessing upon yourself, beware, lest without intent you invoke a curse upon a neighbor at the same time. If you pray for the blessing of rain upon your crop which needs it, by that act you are possibly praying for a curse upon some neighbor's crop which may not need rain and can be injured by it. You have heard your servant's prayer, the uttered part of it. I am commissioned of God to put into words the other part of it, that part which the pastor and also you in your hearts fervently prayed silently and ignorantly. And unthinkingly, Lord, grant that it was so. You heard these words. Grant us the victory, O Lord our God. That is sufficient. The whole of the uttered prayer is compact into those pregnant words. Elaboration were not necessary. When you have prayed for victory, you have prayed for many unmentioned results which follow victory, must follow it, cannot help but follow it. Upon the listening spirit of God the Father fell also the unspoken part of the prayer. He commandeth me to put it into words. Listen! O Lord our Father, our young patriots, idols of our hearts, go forth to battle, be thou near them. With them in spirit we also go, for from the sweet place of our beloved firesides to smite the foe. O Lord our God, help us to tear their soldiers to bloody shreds with our shells. Help us to cover their smiling fields with the pale forms of their patriot dead. Help us to drown the thunder of the guns with the shrieks of their wounded, writhing in pain. Help us to lay waste their humble homes with a hurricane of fire. Help us to wring the hearts of the unoffending widows with unavailing grief. Help us to turn out roofless their little children, to wander unfriended the wastes of their desolated land in rags, hunger, and thirst, sports of the sun flames of summer and the icy winds of winter, broken in spirit, worn with travail, imploring thee for the refuge of the grave and denied it. For our sakes who adore thee, Lord, blast their hopes, blight their lives. Protract their bitter pilgrimage, make heavy their steps. water their way with tears, stain the white snow with the blood of their wounded feet. We ask it in the spirit of love, of him who is the source of love, and who is the ever-faithful refuge and friend of all that are beset and seek his aid with humble and contrite hearts. Amen. After a pause, ye have prayed it. If ye still desire it, speak. The messenger of the Most High waits. It was believed afterward that the man was a lunatic, because there was no sense in what he said. And that was The War Prayer by Mark Twain.
Then I'll be gone, but that won't be my end. For my guns and my saddle will always be filled by unwelcome travelers.
Our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Unwelcome Guests is produced by Chris Sturr, Jesse Lynn, Lynn Gary, and Sean Ewald. We are solely responsible for its content.
Let go.